The When Dating Hurts podcast is sponsored by Nom Nom. I'm a big advocate for better food for pets. When they eat healthier, they live healthier. And Nom Nom's food for dogs is full of fresh proteins a dog loves and the vitamins and nutrients they need to thrive. Nom Nom meals are pre-portioned for your dog's exact caloric needs. So it's the easiest way to take the guesswork out of feeding your dog the best. Just tell them about your pup, age, breed, weight, allergies, and protein preferences. Get fresh, prepackaged, totally nutritious meals delivered directly to your door for even less. Order Nom Nom today. Go to trynom.com/whendatinghurts and get 50% off your first order, plus free shipping. And Nom Nom comes with a money-back guarantee. That means if your dog doesn't love each meal, Nom Nom will refund your first order. Nom Nom is real good food for your dog. Head to trynom.com/whendatinghurts. The When Dating Hurts podcast is supported by BlendJet. Big, bulky blenders are a real pain to use, but the BlendJet 2 blender makes blending a snap. I'm using mine several times a day. Convenience is the reason why. The BlendJet 2 is portable, so you can blend up a smoothie at work, a protein shake at the gym, or even a margarita on the beach. It can fit into your cup holder, but powerful enough to blast through tough ingredients like ice and frozen fruit with ease. And BlendJet 2 is whisper quiet, so you can make your morning smoothie without waking up the whole house. BlendJet lasts for 15 or more blends and recharges quickly via USB-C. Best of all, BlendJet 2 cleans itself. Just blend water with a drop of soap and you're good to go. With over 30 plus colors and patterns to choose from, there's a BlendJet 2 to complement any style. Blend anytime, anywhere with the BlendJet 2 portable blender. Seriously, what are you waiting for? No other blender on the market comes close to the quality, power, and innovation of the BlendJet 2. They guarantee you'll love it or your money back. Shop today and get the best deal ever. Head to BlendJet.com and use the promo code WhenDatingHurts12 for your 12% off your order and free 2-day shipping. That's BlendJet.
What I love about When Dating Hurts is when I pick up my 14-year-old daughter from school, I can put an episode on and sit there and it explains the warning signs of what domestic violence is. Obviously, she's coming to an age where she's getting older and this is the most invaluable advice that she can receive. And from someone that has experienced such a hard and traumatic loss, thank you, Bill. I really appreciate everything you do.
The When Dating Hurts podcast continues to grow in popularity. The more who listen, the more who will know the realities of dating and domestic violence. In the meantime, the When Dating Hurts book, in paperback, ebook, and audiobook, is being purchased and read by concerned parents, teachers, victims and survivors, and of course, those who are currently dating. Education leads to empowerment. That way, if a potential abuser is targeting you or someone you care about, you will know how to detect it and how to break free and stay safe. Up next, another survivor story to illustrate how an innocent person can become manipulated and trapped in abusive relationships. Let's rejoin Sarah in part two of her three-part story. As hard as she tries to bring John along and get their relationship to a healthier place, John wants no parts of it. Sometimes things have to get really bad for them to hit rock bottom and become better. Let's reconnect with Sarah.
I was not being an equal. I was still under this person, and they could just sort of do what they wanted, and then I was along for the ride. And I think because I had not taken that time to develop my own sense of place in the world and that I could make decisions and that, and I didn't have any money. I have no money. I've like worked at the fair that summer that I met him to buy his engagement ring. Like I just was coming from a totally different place in life of like a poor student. And he was this person who, you know, had family wealth, some family wealth. And I think he didn't know how to have a mutual relationship that was built on two equals, you know, and respect. And he didn't know how to have conversations where maybe you didn't get your way.
He didn't get the give and take of it all.
The relationship worked for him because I was still a child, honestly. And I hadn't developed my own sense of independence. And so as we're kind of getting our life rolling, these things are happening. You know, we're having these arguments over, I don't really understand what's happening. You know, I'm like, I think we're having something like I would change a channel in the car without asking him. Like if there was a commercial on, I might change the channel to another station. And it's like something like that would set off an entire unleash wrath. I don't understand what's happening. Like, what are we actually fighting about? Those kinds of situations would just become the norm for us.
But those things would trigger his anger?
Yes, yes. And then it would be like, oh, well, I'm so sorry. Or, you know, the quick apology, like afterwards, or the no apology, but he would try to buy me something or, you know, and it wasn't like we were rich, but it was just like, oh, I'm as a transactional, like I'm getting you something. So, and then there would be moments where I'm trying to make friends. Like I had moved to a town nearby, but I didn't really have friends in the area. And I was trying to build some friendships and go out into the world and build a life for myself and apply for jobs. Anytime I would do something like that, and I'm not thinking I need to ask this person's permission to, you know, make friends or do these things, but that would just trigger this rage in him. And he would just kind of be seething. And I'm like, well, I don't understand what's happening, like what's going on, what I've done here. And then, you know, we'd kind of live in the seething moment for a bit, and then there'd be an explosion that could be anything. Anything could trigger it, like, yeah, turning a radio station. And he'd just be in my face, like just rage, screaming. I would just be shut down emotionally. And that was like something that I was used to. That was a pattern that I had grown up with, was just sort of being the vessel of rage so that in my mind, so this person can kind of go out and go about their day and seem normal to everyone else. But then they have you to take things out on.
I can picture that. You become the punching bag. And then to the rest of the world, he's this charming, wonderful guy who would never do such a thing.
Yeah, so quiet. And people, what I came to find out later is that other people did know that he was like that. But nobody warned me, of course.
Well, that does happen oftentimes. For a lot of people, if they know about that type of thing, could be friends, could be family, they almost look at you. And they don't tell you this, but they're almost thinking, well, maybe she can help him get through this and stop doing that stuff.
That is exactly what happened, really. Mm-hmm.
Maybe she can straighten him out.
And I think from the outside to them, it seemed like it because I played the part. I did. And I really did think that that was my job because that's what I was taught, is it was my job to be long suffering.
Do the cleanup and do the reassembly, all that.
Yeah. And for him, it was like, well, I have trust issues or I have this or that. And so it was my job to heal that for him and to prove to him pretty much immediately. It was like accusing me of cheating on him with other people. Like, and so eventually I drifted away from that, the ministry that had been important to me and that I spent a lot of time in, because I couldn't work with anyone because he would accuse me of cheating on them. And at the time, I didn't feel like it's just how messed up I was and where I was in my development as a person. I mean, I just did not think that I had the ability to say, actually, I'm not putting up with this. You're wrong. I'm not putting up with this and I'm leaving. I really felt that it was my job to help him through his insecurities and prove to him, and even maybe to myself, that I was not this person that he thought, that he was telling me that I was. Really, it was just, the pattern was like, anything that triggered his insecurity would create this reaction within him, and then he would need to do something to hurt me or control me. And those things became sabotaging efforts at getting jobs. I think where I would have been able to maybe get out if we hadn't had kids together, but it was really the having the children so early that really kind of set me on this path of staying in these patterns with him and trying to make it work and just being lost in the pattern of it. Honestly, it's dizzying when you get there.
You don't mean to be doing this. You actually probably somehow want to be doing the opposite, but you're getting in deeper and deeper. And it's almost like you are adding more and more invisible handcuffs to this person and to this life.
Yes.
All along hoping it'll turn around and it'll start to become what it maybe could have been, but it's not. And it's going to become less of that. And more children equals less chance of getting a job. And in the meantime, he is trying to isolate you. So he doesn't really want you out there having a job and meeting people. He doesn't want you having friends who you might share some of this with, who might say, you know, your marriage is kind of messed up, or your marriage is really one-sided. All of that is some people call dissonance. It's not the music he wants playing in your head. He just wants it to be him and what he wants and his ability to do whatever he wants, and you forgive him.
Yeah. You know, I did have moments like the earlier times when he would be physically aggressive and abusive to me, especially when I was pregnant. There would be times where I would have a moment of clarity, like, this is not okay. You know, I might go to my mom or to somebody and say what had happened. And it was like, well, yeah, that's just kind of how it is.
Life with John.
Yeah. And right. Maybe a bit of you made your bed, you know.
Do you think your relationship with your mom was kind of like, you signed up for this and that's the way these things can go? And if anything, she knows John, the charming version of John. So she's not really wanting to point the finger at John and say he's the problem. It's like, you're the problem because you haven't accepted what you signed up for.
You know, I think there's like a mix of that and her also thinking that he's going to turn things around the same way that she thought with my dad. And all of this comes together in an interesting way later too, in that, so John really started to isolate me from my family. He just had huge problems with them. I also was beginning to have problems with my family because I was like, well, as I'm starting to have my own family, reflect on my own childhood, and I'm starting to see these things that I feel were pretty negative, you know, maybe I'd like to deal with my parents. Well, John took advantage of that, saw an in for that, and really used my own searching within myself to figure out my past and things to drive the wedge and really be like, well, I don't think that you should even be around your parents or your family. And I did need to put up some boundaries with my family, and I did do that, but that was not, he was not looking out for my best interests or my mental health. He was like really trying to get me away from my family. I went through a time where I didn't really have a lot to do with my family and even my extended family. And he didn't want anyone over helping that would help me with my kids either. And really, he just didn't want anyone looking into our life.
What was your relationship with your brother like during this?
You know, my brother was kind of doing his own thing. He's a couple years older than me. There was a lot of this element of what we had kind of just talked about, like the you signed up for this.
Oh, really? He went there too?
Yeah, like, and these were issues like that had kind of developed in our own family of origin. You know, my dad had really, he'd been pretty bad to my brother. Like, just, I've watched him be abusive to my brother, and it seemed like I had it easier in the family because my mom and my brother had kind of taken more of the brunt of my dad's behaviors. And so I think there was sort of this feeling of like, well, I was getting just getting a taste of what life was like now, you know?
It's like, that's where I've been all along. Now you're getting to feel it.
Yeah. And
okay. Makes sense.
I was also pretty good at hiding the worst parts of it. And so that's not on them. But at the same time, everybody saw what was happening. But we were so accustomed to so much dysfunction. And we're all wrapped up in our own dysfunctions that we really couldn't be there for each other in very healthy ways. Saying things like, hey, I don't think that this is good for you. Or this person is not treating you well. None of us could really do that for each other at the time. That started to change. I started putting up some boundaries within my own family. I had become convinced that I was like a super abuser, because that's my, like, John was like, you are an abusive person. You're abusing me. Had also kind of co-opted some of this language of within our church too, of the ideas of, you know, that I was just like a super manipulator. And that was always a big fear of mine. I'm like, well, what if I don't know that I'm like a bad person?
He laid that on you?
Yes, very much so.
That you were an abuser and you were a manipulator?
Yes. Yeah.
What did he use as evidence to spin that one, do you think?
Oh, anything. I mean, and I was so, this is the other thing, like I was so sleep deprived. I had all of these young babies. He would not help with them at night. And I had been always very sick during my pregnancies as well. And so I was kind of just in a weak state, a weakened state. And I mean, it would be things like we would be driving, going somewhere. And it was to the point of, you know, if I didn't turn on the air conditioning enough, I was trying to make him uncomfortable. Anything that I did or didn't do was like some sort of scheme against him. And like, I'm just living my life. Like, I mean, I'm just doing my normal thing, but he read into every single thing that I was doing that I was somehow out to get him. It was really, when I think back to that time in my life and how hard it was for me to even know up from down, but part of that was just being lost and being so sleep deprived, being wrapped up in taking care of these children and being pregnant and being sick and fighting for every inch of normalcy and health that I could, you know, and thinking that I was convinced that I really was a bad person. Because of that, I went on a quest. I was like, I'm going to get help. I'm going to get counseling. I'm going to learn all of these things that like I haven't learned in my life. And you know what? It benefited me. I started putting up boundaries with my own family. I started being able to be a better mom to my own kids. I started, you know, recognizing patterns in my life that were not okay, and being able to call those things out and begin to make changes. One of the first boundaries that I put up was with my own dad. I was like, and then telling my mom, like, I don't like the way that he treats you. It's wrong. Not okay. And I support you. Whatever it is that you decide to do, if you are going to be with him or whatever, you want to leave him someday, I just want you to know that I see this for what it is, and it's wrong. I couldn't see and call out. I was in too much denial for my own self. I mean, I knew that those things were happening in my life, but I was in the like, well, as I'm getting better, these things are going to get better. Me and John, our negative cycles aren't going to be triggering each other so much. And as I get better, then our relationship is going to get better. That was like, obviously not the case.
So you went on this improvement thing, this kick. Where'd you go? Was it psychotherapy or what were you, who'd you call upon?
I did a lot of reading, but then I did also, I did go to a therapist. And interestingly, I was connected through the church that I was going to at the time. And I'm so glad that that happen, because this therapist that I ended up going to was so good and so patient with me and just really walked me out of this situation. And I think that she never told me to leave him, but I became strong enough that I did leave him. But he never thought that would happen while I was going to something affiliated with a church. And he would also never go to counseling with me. It was not a thing he would ever do. I mean, we tried once and I paid the price for it through his rage later. But
so when he went, how did he act when he was doing his hour with that person? Was he just pushing back and
totally quiet and shut down? I mean, he just won't really respond.
Not buying into it, just getting through it.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, very, very much so. And just becoming angry.
Gives you a blast of it. I'll never do that again afterwards.
Yeah. And for him, it's like, well, I'm not the one that needs.
Yeah, you're the one with all the problems. Why am I going there?
Yeah.
So when you were receiving therapy, how much about home life did you open up about? I mean, did you come in on the first day and say, look, I've got the situation going on at home?
No, I was so in my mind, that wasn't the biggest problem. I was my biggest problem. And so I really led with, I'm struggling with parenting. Like I'm depressed and I'm struggling with my own feelings about my family of origin, and which I was at the time. It was just a lot going on, kind of coming to terms with my own past and where I was at. And things had kind of, at that time even, I had learned the game a bit, right? I had learned how to keep John, like mostly, I had learned how to act. I can do these things and I can't do these things. And so everything, it wasn't blowing up all the time anymore.
You knew his triggers and you avoided them.
Yeah. So we were really playing that game. And I had gotten okay at it.
You're highly practiced at that point.
Yeah. So the blow ups and the things, they would still happen. But because I was getting pretty good at being this person that he wanted me to be, I was miserable and struggling. But our home life kind of seemed like it was improving. So that was an added dimension that was confusing for me.
It's a bizarre way to live.
It is, yeah.
When he was at his worst, I mean, I see a lot of gaslighting, mind games, all those type of things are going on with this guy. He's bringing it every day of the week. I feel like you've kind of signaled a bit that he was physical with you too. Is that right?
Yeah.
So what did he do in those instances?
The main thing that he would do would be, he would like, it was like a rage bomb, and then he would just be smothering me. So he would be on top of me and just kind of crushing me, essentially. So he wouldn't hit me early on. He would just like overcome me, is how I would describe it.
Are you on the floor at that moment? Where are you?
On a bed, on a floor, you know, it kind of up against a wall, in a car, you know, wherever, it would just sort of be like trapping me. Mm-hmm. And he was bigger than me. And so he would just kind of be smothering me or crushing me under his weight.
Is he yelling at you at the same time or just mashing you?
And mashing me, yelling at me, just screaming. And I would kind of just go into sort of, you know, trying to be as quiet and still as I could, mm-hmm. because I really was just, when that would happen, I felt like if I did anything that, like, I just had to become as still and quiet as I could until it passed.
Okay.
And it's the first time it happened, I was also pregnant. And so I was like, when I was very caught off guard, but I was also, it felt pretty vulnerable as a pregnant person. And I'm, what is happening? But immediately I would just go into total survival. Like, I'm not going to make this any worse. And then I would just kind of be in shock afterwards. But yeah, this incident would probably last a couple minutes. And then he would kind of back off And then it might happen again. Like he might, and I'd just continue to be still and quiet. Whenever it is that that pressure was released for him of getting out that rage, those incidents were never addressed. I mean, I would say I would talk around it. Even I still do that. It's really hard. Never an apology or an acknowledgement that they happened. Those kinds of things were like very acute incidents of rage. You know, it was like hard for me to breathe. It felt very dangerous.
I'm sure.
And then there would be things where he would posture like he's going to hit me, but then he would either hit himself or break something and punch a wall. He would also do weird things too. Like if I was sick, I had really bad morning sickness for a lot of my, it wouldn't just go away after the first trimester. It would kind of continue. And so things like not pulling over, you know, so that I could, like if we were driving to be, so I could, you know, get some relief from if I was feeling ill or needed to use a restroom. It would be like, well, you're trying to control me by telling me that you feel sick. And it's like, I couldn't even ask. I just couldn't ask for anything specific. I had to kind of talk around everything. I couldn't say directly, like, I'm not feeling well, or I need to have something to eat right now because I feel weak or sick.
Yeah, sick to your stomach.
Yeah. So those little things too were just bad for my health, or rolling up the window and smoking in the car while I'm, you know, pregnant, or things like that would be so weird. Like he wouldn't smoke. Like it wasn't something he regularly did. And then we'd get in the car and all of a sudden he'd have a cigarette and roll the windows up.
Yeah, cause you're
like,
captured.
Why are you doing that? Yeah. Just those kinds of things that made me feel really insane.
It's a strange campaign that he was putting on. Absolutely.
Yeah. Or waking me up, you know, and,
now, you had a total of 5 children with him. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
That's amazing. And how long you were married? Was that 8 years?
Yeah, we were married for 8 years.
You had reached the point where you had a way to coexist with him, albeit awful. At some point, you start marching towards leaving this person and eventually do. So what began to get you to the point where you bottomed out or turned the corner and it's like, I can't do this anymore. I got to get out of this thing.
I think I just actually slowly started becoming a healthier person, a little more connected to who I was. For so long, I had this way of being where I just never felt like I had any autonomy on my own, or I could say no, or I could ask for anything. As I started learning the importance of those things just in for everyone in their everyday life and practicing those things, I started having a life, right? And, you know, I think he also got a bit complacent in his control tactics as well. Like he thought he had me more under his thumb than he did, because he had built a world where he had the pick of who our friends were. He had the pick of all of these things, but even within that, he still couldn't control everything. So, but I think he had the sense that I would just never leave. I had too many kids with him. And for him, it was like a tactic of, well, I'm going to make this person feel so bad about themselves that they will never leave.
As if he's the only person that you could ever have a life with because you lacked any value.
Right. And you know, I didn't have a lot of work experience. There were times where I did work within our marriage, but again, yeah, they didn't last that long. So anyway, through therapy, I really, and also some key friendships, like I did have over the years, I think something that has really helped me in my life is just, I have had some good examples and role models through people who were my friends at different times or in my sphere. So observing other people where I was like, wow, I noticed that they have something about them that I really like or admire. And so I would kind of try to learn from those people. And so as I'm learning different ways of being, taking up my own interests again, music has always been a really big part of my life. And so I had begun really doing a lot more of that. I was at home so much with my kids. And so I bought some instruments and started learning how to play them, had been singing and doing different things. And I was also using it. Music was really becoming a therapeutic tool for me to, and writing to kind of start to express these things that I couldn't really reach within myself. I had built so many walls of denial and I couldn't talk about anything directly, even to myself. Writing songs had become a way of getting something out that I really had a hard time accessing.
I can't picture you playing guitar and singing some song about this situation if he's anywhere around. So
no, definitely not.
So he's out, he's at work or something, and that's your opportunity to kind
of
free yourself and do what you want to do and live again and breathe.
Yeah. And in between the moments of being overwhelmed, even still with raising a bunch of small children, you know, but I just really needed to find some kind of way to deal with the turmoil that I had going on. And I wanted to be a good mom. I knew that I needed to be a healthier person. And so that was something that helped me, going to therapy and just learning skills, working on my self-esteem as well.
So you're working on your self-esteem. What are you doing? The reason I ask that question is a lot of people who have diminished or low self-esteem allow things to happen in their lives they normally wouldn't have let happen.
Mm-hmm.
You can see that, right?
Yeah.
You lower your fences as to what you let in because your feelings about yourself, your self-esteem, are not at a high place. If your self-esteem was at a high place, you would say, I'm not doing that, or I'm not putting up with that, or that's not part of who I am. You know, you just kind of push back. So how do you feel you managed to dial up your self-esteem?
One thing would be I finally started to think of myself in ways that I thought about other people. I started to give myself the same grace that I gave other people. I tried to start doing that for myself. I couldn't even get to the point yet where I'm like, you're a good enough person. And so you deserve respect. It was like, well, I wouldn't think that about another person. So maybe I shouldn't think it about myself. That was really where I started. I was generous to other people. I did give other people the benefit of the doubt. I did try to see the best in other people. And so it was starting to do that for myself and saying, I don't know, maybe you're not actually a terrible person. You're doing the best you can. Instead of focusing on beating myself up, I would talk to myself the way that I might talk to my child, or a way that I would have wanted to be talked to.
I think that's great. That's great.
Yeah. Let's say I wasn't the mom I wanted to be that day, yelled at my kid or something, then instead of being like, I'm a horrible person, and of course, you know, it feeding into this image I had of myself, it was like, well, you're tired today. It makes sense that you maybe lost your temper, or you didn't behave the way you want. You're in your perfect image of yourself. Oh, well, it's okay. Move on. That's something I would say to a friend. If my friend was like, gosh, I just had the hardest day. I just started talking to myself the way I would talk to a friend.
I think that's very good. And it's very practical.
That was where that started.
That's good.
Building from there, then it was like, well, what would I say to my friend if they were depressed? I would say, well, maybe you should go do something that you enjoy. And it's giving myself permission to do these things for myself that were good for me. Okay, I'm going to spend 10 minutes doing music. Even just working a little bit on a song would give me a little tiny bit of confidence. It would get me out of my headspace that was maybe swirly or negative, and help me process something. And then I had something to look at that I had done. I think building on those things. And then I started doing more with other people. I did start being in the world, and I started, when the pressure would come up at home to the sabotaging or the acting out, I wouldn't give in. I stopped bowing to John. Basically, he started even trying to get my friends and other people in my life to warn me. You know, they're like, I had people saying, well, are you concerned that, you know, you're doing this music or you're working on your music a lot or you're doing this and that? And are you concerned that it's going to distract from your family or this or that? And, well, you know, John had talked to me and he's concerned about this or, and I was just like, no, I'm not concerned because I'm feeling healthier and I'm doing better. And so anyway, I just put my foot in, I put my foot down about it and it was something I wasn't going to give up. And then I joined a band actually.
Really? Yeah. You joined a band?
I did. Yes. Which was like fun, but, and silly. And it wasn't anything. It was just something I did in my free time. Like that was another thing is I started making time. I wasn't just wrapped up in being a mom. Mm-hmm.
Have you heard of the concept of flying monkeys?
No.
Flying monkeys is something that was mentioned to me. I'm sure the term has been around for a very long time, but I feel like I heard about it the first time a year and a half ago on the podcast. Flying monkeys is interesting. You go back to the Wizard of Oz, okay? You've got those flying monkeys, those kind of little monkey soldier characters flying around and going after Dorothy and going after the Cowardly Lion and all that. Anyway, so that's what some people who are abusive do. They get their flying monkeys, in this case, some of your friends, but he would then get them and put them into sending you messages that he wants you to get, but he's not doing it. He's not getting his hands dirty. He's getting them to do it, hoping that they'll do his bidding for him. They become his flying monkeys.
Yeah.
And that's what that is.
Yeah. It was, he had really also, I think it would have been harder for him to use some of the tactics that when I was younger and in the beginning of our relationship, some of those tactics, it would have been harder to hide them at that time in our life. And I wasn't as susceptible to them. Our kids were also getting older and they would have seen more of those things. Thankfully, I don't think that that was something he really wanted. It would be harder for him to hide some of the more overt abusive behavior. And I really do. I think he thought he had me a little more under his thumb and he could use these other things. He could use flying monkeys, use social pressure.
Yes.
And, but I also had, you know, some people around me who were like, hey, I noticed that you seem different. Like you seem stronger and like healthier and were encouraging me. And that helped a lot.
Right. And then your self-esteem's coming up.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm interacting with other people and I'm not only getting this reflection of who I am from this person who has,
yes,
who wants me to see myself a certain way. I was getting a reflection back from other people
who are probably a little more objective. Their vested interest in you is not the same. They're not married to you.
Yeah.
Maybe in some cases they didn't really have to spin the story one way or another. They're just saying, hey, seems like you seem happier, you seem brighter, you're more outgoing now.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, hey, I like this version of myself. This concludes Sarah's story, part 2. Be looking for part 3 on the When Dating Hurts podcast. Thank you for listening to the When Dating Hurts podcast. We have been steadily moving up in podcast review rankings based on downloads in the relationships category. That means more and more listeners are getting the kind of advice that can improve lives for victims, survivors, and their families. If you feel we need to hear your story, do not hesitate to email me at BillMitchell@WhenDatingHurts.com. That's BillMitchell@WhenDatingHurts.com.